This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Why are African Americans in Asheville more likely to be charged with resisting an officer than other residents? A new analysis from the Asheville Citizen Times shows that more than a third of resisting an officer charges are made against African Americans. The black population in Asheville is only about 12%. Joel Burgess is government accountability reporter for the Asheville Citizen Times. He did the analysis, spoke with some experts and advocates to find out what is behind this disparity, and joins us now from partner station Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. Joel, welcome back.
Thanks much. Good to talk to you again, Frank.
Tell us what prompted you to take a deeper look at arrest records in Asheville.
Well, people might remember we had a police incident here that got exposed after we at the Citizen Times obtained a leaked police body camera video of an arrest back in 2017. It involved a white police officer named Christopher Hickman and a black pedestrian named Johnny Rush. And Rush was pulled over, well, stopped. He was walking for jaywalking and for cutting across a parking lot late at night, charged with trespassing. And the situation went downhill. Rush was beaten, shocked, choked, and he was charged with various crimes. And one of them was resisting an officer. It's also called resist, delay, obstruct, sometimes just known as RDO. And having worked in the area and in newspapers for quite a while now, I've seen this charge happen in a lot of arrest warrants. So we just got really curious. This charge against Rush was ultimately dismissed, but it seemed ironic looking at the footage and seeing him being pinned to the ground and beaten and shocked and choked. And it seemed like any resistance he was offering was to protect himself. So we went and did a public records request with the Asheville Police Department for the last 5 years of arrest records.
What did you find?
Well, we asked for it. By the way, in those 5 years, you had about 24,000 arrests, but we were particularly interested in arrests that involved the charge of resisting an officer. It's a class two misdemeanor, by the way, in North Carolina. And we found that there were 1,800 of them. And I have to say that this was not entirely me. We had a data analyst named Michael McGlone, who was instrumental in helping sort through this stuff. It really was not very wieldy, we would say, if that's a way to put it. It was hard to deal with. And what we figured out is what you talked about in the opening, is that 35% of the arrests were of black people. And that's nearly triple the city's population of African Americans, which, as you said, was 12%. It just struck us. And another thing that we decided to look at was we created a subgroup, a subset, if you will, of people who had only been charged with resisting an officer. In other words, there's no other charge listed. It's possible there might have been a citation, we learned later, but it's an odd thing, and it's something that even police advocates say raises a red flag, and even Asheville Police Department officials say they prefer officers not to do. And we found there were 166 of those, which arguably, you know, may not be statistically significant, but the interesting thing is that it actually lined up. 34% of those charged with standalone RDOs were also black.
And again, compared to the population, a huge disparity. And we should probably clear this up a little bit, because we think about that charge, and most commonly we use the phrase resisting arrest. And so it would seem preposterous that you could only be charged with resisting arrest, right? I mean, there must have been a precipitating factor. It's not quite that. It's resisting an officer, resist, delay, and obstruct. So spread it out and explain how anybody could be charged with that and nothing else.
Right. And thank you for making that point, because I even commonly called it resisting arrest until I read the statute and thought about it and talked with people about it. Well, there's some things that I think all of us would say, obviously, that's a person resisting an officer. Somebody who, an officer moves to arrest this person, they struggle. They run away after an officer says stop, and they clearly hear them, and you know, they understand that they are the subject of an investigation, or the officer wants to talk to them because of a crime. But there's other things that really we might not understand. For example, if you give an officer false information, maybe you're in a car with somebody and you give a wrong name, you give a different address. In some cases, simply walking away has been determined to be resisting an officer, though we found a case where that was not true, because there has to be, if a person walks away, they have to understand that an officer is trying to right. stop them. So it's the language is very broad, and because of that, a lot of civil rights advocates and have criticized it and said it's overly broad and it's subjective and it opens the door up for abuse.
Well, and it certainly does raise that question with this disparity that you've detected because of the data dive you've done. What are experts saying about that? You did talk to a number of people who tried to explain why. Again, given the subjectivity, you can imagine there just might be this sort of thing. What are they saying about it?
Well, an important thing to add on too about that subjectivity is the response that we got from, again, the police department itself and police advocates was that, yes, they agreed it was it could be subjective, but they said that was a necessary tool for them to deal with issues on the street. So that was an interesting response. But regarding a lot of other people, what we found is we talked to Frank Baumgartner, and I believe he's been a guest with you. He's a UNC Chapel Hill political science professor, and he's more of a specialist in traffic stops and the disparities that people are finding now, racial disparities in traffic stops around the state, including in Asheville. We've been looking at those too. And Baumgartner, I told him my statistics, and he said, my gosh. And he said, in fact, he too had done a brief study on this where he had looked statewide and found that there, as a matter of fact, is a disparity statewide also. But it's not, in terms of population, it's still not as great. You know, statewide, it's about twice the percentage population of black people in North Carolina. And again, in Asheville, it's nearly three times. And so he found that striking. And his attitude, you know, where we've gone with this is saying, look, there's a disparity. Let's talk to people about why. But Baumgartner has started drawing the link and saying it could be that black people are arresting more, but are resisting more, but I don't think so. And some civil rights advocates have said, look, it's more than that. It's predatory policing. And probably the worst case of this that we found and that people really already knew about, at least those who dug into the report on Ferguson, Missouri, we talked to a former prosecutor who got involved there, and people know that name. It's become just a watershed moment in racial politics in America. And Chirag Baines is the name of the former prosecutor. And he said that the disparity there was really striking, and that they've started to call it contempt by cop or contempt of cop, excuse me. And the idea was that it seemed that officers, when they didn't like responses that they were getting from people, were charging them with resisting. Go ahead.
Well, go ahead, because I want to ask you, because in a number of cases, these resisting, especially the standalone, are dropped. And there's a fair percentage of them that are dropped. We can talk about that, but that doesn't necessarily mean good things either, because it can also be a leverage. So if it shouldn't have been brought in the first place, and then a prosecutor can use it as leverage, well, I'll drop this, that's not necessarily a good thing if it never should have been brought in the first place.
Yeah, you know, of course, you go to court to you're innocent until proven guilty. But even if charges are dismissed, they tend to stay with you. Mm-hmm. And I'll explain how we found they did in just a minute. But yes, you're right. More than we couldn't do all 1,800 of these RDO arrests. It was really the data from the courts was almost impossible to work with in that way. And that's a separate issue I'd love to talk to the administrative office of the courts about. But so we worked on that subset that, as you said, the 166 standalone arrests. And 57% of black defendants had their charges dismissed. 53% of white. As you said, it's commonly said among some police advocates that they know these charges are used as bargaining chips, and they don't get that worked up about it when it happens. But in talking to one civil rights advocate, Ian Mance, who's with the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, he's an attorney. He said, "Well, that tells me that the prosecutor, the district attorney, doesn't think much about these charges. You know, he doesn't really value them very much or value the evidence." Our district attorney, Todd Williams, said he doesn't know how Mance came to that conclusion, but it's an interesting one to put out there. And one other expert I'll bring up too, who really did specialize in this, is a law professor named Scott Holmes, who's at North Carolina Central in Durham. And Scott, as a defense attorney before he became a professor, said that he started to see these charges And along with other charges that he started to call a criminalization of poverty, public urination, second-degree trespassing. And he said he started mailing out letters, kind of like some attorneys do when they see traffic tickets. They have a system where they mail them out to offer to represent people. And in his motive, I don't think, was to make a lot of money. I think he felt a degree of outrage about this. But when he became a law professor, he had his students work on a project. And there in Durham, he found that, yes, there was a large disparity. Again, I don't think it was as much in Asheville in terms of the percentage of population. But a conclusion, an interesting conclusion he came to was that many of them did involve a feeling by officers that they were being disrespected, you know, a sense that there was a misunderstanding between the two parties. And it made me go back again and think about what spurred us to do this arrest of that black pedestrian, Johnny Rush, back in 2017. And I went back and listened again to the tape and listened to his interaction with police. And in fact, it was striking because there was a point at which one of the police officer trainees said to him, look at me, and Rush said, I don't have to. And another one in which the officer used the term punk, you're trying to punk me, which essentially is about respecting somebody or disrespecting somebody, really, is what that's talking about. It was just striking. So as part of this reporting that we did, I went back through and wrote the transcript of this portion of the arrest so people could kind of read it and understand this aspect that you have Holmes and other people saying plays a role in this charge.
Joel, thank you so much for your reporting and the deep dive. I know this is a continuing report and investigation with you. I deeply appreciate what you've done and certainly coming on to talk with us. It's not the end of it. We'll talk again. Joel Burgess, thank you so much.
Always happy to be here.
Joel Burgess, government accountability reporter for the Asheville Citizen Times. You can find a link at our website, The State of Things. There is more ahead. Stay tuned.